Outgoing Governor George Ryan emptied Illinois' death row of 160 inmates in a Saturday speech at the law school. Northwestern, that is, validating years of work by Northwestern faculty and students to free the wrongfully convicted. The governor's historic move was greeted by several standing ovations from the invitation-only crowd of anti-death penalty activists, lawyers, and exonerated prisoners, including three of the four former death row inmates pardoned only the previous day. Because the Illinois death penalty system is arbitrary and capricious and therefore immoral, I no longer shall tinker with the machinery of death, said Ryan, borrowing the words of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun. Joining us to talk about the implications of Ryan's decision is Rob Warden. Warden is the executive director of the Center on Wrongful Convictions. He played a key role in informing governor's decision on Saturday. Also joining the discussion is Mike Redlett. Redlett is a professor of sociology at the University of Colorado, and he's the author of a race study that was also part of what helped Governor Ryan make his decision. I want to thank both of you for being with us on Flashpoints. I know you were both there on Saturday. Rob Warden, what was going through your mind as you heard the governor make this speech?
Well, I was very gratified that he came to what I very strongly believed was the right decision, in fact, the only moral decision, as he said, that he could have made under the circumstances. Of course, you know, there's much that remains to be done here. We still have a death penalty on the books, and at a press conference yesterday, prosecutors made it clear that they're going to try to begin again to fill up death row with new people all over, without any changes having been made in the system that led to so many wrongful convictions. You know, we've now had 17 out of 290 people sentenced to death since capital punishment was restored, or 6% of all of those sentenced have later been shown to have been innocent, and nothing has been done to repair the system that produced that result, and prosecutors want to resume it again. So those were some of the thoughts that were running through my mind as the governor was speaking.
And Mike Redlett, were you surprised?
Yes, I was surprised, although I felt for the last 3 years, having worked with the governor and the commission, that he eventually would come to this decision. I have to say that sitting in that audience on Saturday and hearing him pronounce the words was one of the most moving experiences I've ever had. My wife keeps telling me I'm a macho man, but I will admit that on Saturday I had tears in my eyes when the governor spoke. It's really quite a compliment, not only to the lawyers, the staff, the students in Illinois who have worked so hard for this day for so many years, but to literally thousands and thousands of activists around the country. You know, so often activists go out and sit on a picket line or write letters and do whatever, and they really think in the back of their minds this is not doing any good at all. But Governor Ryan on Saturday did make it a point to express his thanks for people from groups like Amnesty International, the Illinois Coalition Against the Death Penalty, and many, many others, some in their 80s and 90s, who have been working for this day for their whole lives.
Rob Warden, talk a little bit about the multiple struggles. I mean, it is interesting that the governor was the campaign chairman for the first George W. Bush run for presidency. Bush is known as Mr. Execution, and here is his chairman in a major state now coming out against the death penalty.
I think it's pretty amazing. You know, George Ryan had supported the death penalty all of his life when he was a brand-new legislator and 1973. He was elected in 1972, the same year that the Supreme Court set aside the death penalty in Furman versus Georgia. Illinois, that very next year, passed a statute to restore it. George Ryan was in the forefront of the representatives voting for that legislation. That law was declared unconstitutional. A new one came in, finally got passed in 1977 again. It had the ardent support of George Ryan, who in the succeeding years voted to expand it and apply the death penalty to more and more cases. But when he became governor, George Ryan, a case came up in Illinois, one of the cases that we were involved with, and involving a man named Anthony Porter, who was within 48 hours of execution, when the Illinois Supreme Court granted a reprieve so that his IQ could be tested. There was a question about whether Mr. Porter was smart enough to understand what was about to happen to him and why. Subsequently, the students from Northwestern, from the Medill School of Journalism, gotten the confessions of the actual killer in that case, and corroborated by innumerable witnesses, and Anthony Porter was released. He was the 10th exonerated person in Illinois. He'd been within 48 hours of execution, and George Ryan knew, had not the Supreme Court delayed that execution, and it was almost a miracle because none of us thought we had any chance of prevailing in that action, that it happened. But George Ryan knew if it hadn't happened, he would have approved that execution, and Anthony Porter would be a dead man, and George Ryan would have had that blood on his hands, and he knew that. It had a profound effect on him. Been a politician all of his life, and he said, this is above politics. This transcends politics.
Well, that
I will
is...
not kill people for votes. And that's the pivotal event, I think.
Well, that is so unusual for actually a politician to be moved by anything else other than what is the latest poll about what's going to get him elected. I'm wondering if this in any way undermined his political career, do you think?
No, I don't really think so. Unfortunately, a terrible scandal arose from his tenure as Secretary of State before he was elected governor, in which some of his underlings were selling chauffeur's licenses and taking bribes, and it was really a bad scandal. That's what brought about the end of his political career. But his position on capital punishment, having declared a moratorium on executions here at the beginning of 2001, was just an amazing, turned out to be extremely popular. And he had no way of knowing that, but he took that courageous step in that process. And the more he learned about the issue and the more he focused on it, the more he became persuaded that it was not fair and that it would not work, and probably that it would never work.
Well, clearly, Rob Warden, you are a hero here, and there are a number of heroes. You've
been an army of ants, like Mike Radlett said at the beginning. I mean, there are literally hundreds of people right here in Illinois who worked for this day, who worked very hard. I was just one of them. And there are many people from organizations like the Coalition Against the Death Penalty and the Campaign to End the Death Penalty and Amnesty International and the American Civil Liberties Union. Lots of people and lawyers from the Office of the State Appellate Defender and countless private lawyers who took these cases pro bono to bring justice. I mean, this is something that nobody did alone.
And the courageous young students.
And a lot of students, yes.
Well, we're going to sort of focus in a little bit on what comes next, for instance, Florida. And I know that your colleague, Mike Radlett, has a lot to say about that. But remind people, what are some of the situations, some of the false setups that led to people being on death row? I know there was police torture, there was misrepresentation. Just give us a thumbnail sketch of kinds of things that got people to the point where they were almost killed when they were innocent.
Well, aside from the issues like torture, I mean, we can all understand why somebody would confess to a crime under torture. And that indeed happened in Chicago.
There was police torture, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we're talking, there are at least 60 cases here, and we're talking about third world quality torture. I mean, suffocating people, electroshock to the testicles, Russian roulette, dangling people out of windows by their ankles, and things of that sort.
This is in Chicago, not Saudi Arabia.
No, this is in Chicago, in the city of Chicago on the south side. There have been 60 of these cases, and they've been documented. The officers in charge, or the main officer in charge, has been fired by the police. And yet, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, the prosecutorial agency here, while acknowledging that the systemic torture took place, will not acknowledge that it took place in any individual case. That's led to about 10 confessions extracted by torture have put at least 10 people on death row in the state of Illinois. Now, there are other problems. I mean, one of the major problems, of course, is erroneous eyewitness identification. But then there are confessions that are either fabricated or that the authorities construe statements that could be construed innocently, not to be innocent, and contend that they are confessions when other reasonable people might dispute that they, in fact, were. Then there is the pervasive use of jailhouse snitch testimony that is really tantamount to bribery. Prosecutors can take a man who's in facing a charge or maybe been convicted, and if he will simply come forward and say, "Oh, gee, my cellmate confessed to me that he committed this crime," they will let the guy out. Now, if any defense lawyer did that, it would be bribery. We'd call it that. That's what it should be called, and yet prosecutors do it with impunity. That is a very serious problem. Then, of course, we have the fourth major problem is junk science, and we have had people who call themselves forensic scientists and who have that title bestowed often by some official agency going into court, literally fabricating evidence that has helped convict people and in some cases put them onto death row. So those are the major problems, and the Governor's Commission on Capital Punishment attempted to address or did address all of those problems and recommended sweeping reforms that the prosecutors and the police are opposing and so far have done so effectively in the state legislature.
What was, you mentioned that the prosecutor said that they're going to press forward. Were there any angry statements by, like, the Police Benevolence Association or associations that support police action? And
There haven't been, to my knowledge, since this, but the Fraternal Order of Police, which represents, as a union that represents Chicago police officers, has taken a very hard line that if we were to video record custodial interrogations, we would eliminate the vast part of this false confession phenomena. Richard Offshee of Berkeley has called Chicago the false confession capital of America. I think that that's right. Experience shows it. We've got something on the neighborhood of 30 wrongful convictions and murder cases predicated on confessions were later shown to have been false. And yet the police resist this, the prosecutors resist it, and so far the legislature.
Any reaction from the Bush administration? I mean, Bush comes from the state of Texas. He's used to killing people.
Including some who no doubt were innocent.
Was he concerned that his chairman there in 2000 was making history?
Well, they pretty much downplayed it during the campaign, I must say. I mean, they really downplayed it, the association. I'm quite sure he was concerned and thought that that was a liability in a major potential swing state. But as far as I can tell, George Bush has not learned any of the lessons from the Illinois experience. And in fact, the Attorney General who served under George Bush wrote a letter to the Chicago Tribune in which he said that, oh, gee, you may have a problem in Illinois, but we don't have a problem in Texas. We're perfect down here. And in fact, you know, whatever the problem is in Illinois, I can assure you is much less than the problem in any other state. Mike Radley can tell you firsthand about Florida. But we have one of the better public defender operations in the country in place right here in Cook County, which has accounts for the vast majority of capital cases in the whole state, that it's far better than almost any system in almost any other major jurisdiction in the country. We have courts that are at least attuned sometime, unlike the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals that seems to be adverse to entertaining any claim of actual innocence. We have had courts that have looked at these issues, but primarily we've had this army of ants that has been mobilized in Illinois, a pro bono effort by lawyers and law students and faculty members of universities and activists that just hasn't ever been nearly as strong or as effective in any other state yet. But if you had a similar operation in Texas or Florida or Georgia or Alabama, you'd have many, many more.
What a model.
There.
What a model. That's the voice of Rob Warden. Warden is the executive director of the Center on Wrongful Convictions. He played a key role in informing and supporting the decision this Saturday by Governor George Ryan, the outgoing governor, to clear out the death row in Illinois. Also on the telephone with us, and we are delighted to have him with us, is Mike Radlett. Mike, before we focus on Florida, you actually put together a study dealing with the race and racial issues as it comes to the death penalty situation. You gave it to the governor of Illinois. You also gave it to the governor of Florida. What was the different reaction?
Well, the studies were somewhat different. One focused on Illinois, one focused on Florida. In Illinois, the governor gave us complete access to the files of the police, Chicago Police Department, Illinois State Police, Illinois Department of Corrections. Any data source they had about any homicide in Illinois, was ours to go through and look at and find whatever data we could. In Florida, there were no funds to do this type of study at all forthcoming from the state. And once our study was finished, Governor Bush, Jeb Bush, this is, went into denial. Governor Ryan in Illinois appointed a blue ribbon commission of prosecutors, defense attorney, retired judges, and gave them the freedom and the responsibility to do an apolitical study, a neutral study, an objective study of the death penalty in Illinois. Governor Jeb Bush in Florida appointed a 15-member task force that was composed of prosecutors, cops, pro-death penalty families of homicide victims, and a couple defense attorneys, but both of them had applied for judgeships, and they had their applications on Governor Bush's desk. We quickly in Florida called that task force a trash force. They were organized to trash the race research, to say that it was no good, and to defend the system. And then they did the same thing with innocence research. There is a long, long record of erroneous convictions in Florida. It's a longer record than Illinois. And those errors occur for exactly the same reasons that Rob was talking about in Chicago. So what happens in Florida, though, is that the governor got a political appointee, the head of a commission that he appointed to study defense attorneys, basically, in death penalty cases. And this guy went through the cases of erroneous conviction and just did a sophomoric-level, shallow study of all the cases and said, all of these guys are really guilty. And those who claim that they are innocent, you know, people like the Florida Supreme Court, people like prison wardens, people like federal judges, are basically lying. So even though Illinois now has 17 people released from death rows because of innocence, Florida's got 24, and there's another one named Rudolph Holton, who will be freed later on this week. That'll be 25. The governor's response down there is, you know, so what? These guys are guilty as can be, and the problem is these liberal judges and letting guilty people out of death row. So, unfortunately, we don't have the integrity and leadership in Florida that Governor Ryan displayed in Illinois.
In the 2000 election, we saw some serious racism when it came to excluding and disenfranchising African-American voters. Does race matter when it comes to the death penalty?
In Florida, the data there indicate that given identical homicides, that the odds of a death sentence are between 3 and 4 times higher for those who kill whites than for those who kill blacks. Race of defendant matters. Given a white victim, black defendants with white victims are more likely to be sentenced to death than white-on-white homicides, especially true when black males are accused of homicides of white women. Back to the old days of rape, when 90% of those executed in the United States for rape were black men accused of raping white women. In Illinois, we found both race and regional disparities, as well as a whole lot of just arbitrariness, just kind of flipping the coin, or as Governor Ryan put it, on Saturday, it's like getting struck by lightning. In Illinois, again, given similar homicides, people with similar prior records, the odds of a death sentence are about 80% higher in rural areas of the state than they are in Cook County. And we also found that the odds of a death sentence for those who kill whites are about 60% higher than for those who kill blacks. So the difference, again, Florida versus Illinois, is not the problems. The difference is the willingness to stand up and acknowledge the problems, to look at it, get an apolitical body to study these things, and to demand that something be done about it.
Mike Radlett, just remind us about some of the people who were on death row and have now been absolved and freed. How were they set up?
Well, for example, one is a man named Shabaka Brown, who in 1974, no prior record at all. He and a guy he just met, they were short on money. They did a robbery together. And a couple days later, Shabaka turned himself in to the cops and admitted that he did it. And the guy who was involved in the robbery with him had a long prior record, and they're ready to throw him in the joint for several years until he got the idea of falsely implicating Shabaka in a murder. This guy who had done the robbery with him said that Shabaka was there for murder, you know, blah, 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 blah. This guy walks on the murder, but Shabaka ends up on death row. Finally, in 1987, a federal court chastised the Tampa state attorney's office for knowingly using perjured testimony in that particular case. There's another case done in Florida where three people are sleeping in a rest area down on I-95 in Fort Lauderdale. Their sleep was interrupted when a Florida State Trooper and a visiting constable from Canada came up and knocked on the window of the car. And the guy who was driving the car was on the lam. He had a gun. When the smoke cleared, those two police officers were dead. There's gun residue on one guy's hands. But he's the experienced con. He goes to the cops first. And in exchange for being convicted of second-degree murder, he says that the other two guys did it. And that testimony put two people on death row, Jesse Tufaro and Sonny Jacobs. In 1990, Jesse Tufaro was executed. His execution made national headlines because he caught on fire in the electric chair. And the headlines, because of that case, a woman in New York and an attorney recognized Sonny Jacobs as a childhood friend. This friend, who's a filmmaker, and a friend of hers, who's an attorney, reinvestigated the case. And 2 years later, Sonny Jacobs walked out of the prison a free woman. Today she's living in Ireland. She's convicted on identical evidence to Jesse Tufaro, but Jesse Tufaro is in his grave.
Wow. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and we are talking about the historic decision that was made by the outgoing governor, Governor Ryan, the Republican governor in Illinois, where he cleared out death row of 167 inmates because he said that he no longer wants to tinker with the machinery of death. And we're talking to two significant players in that decision. You were just listening to Mike Radlett, professor of sociology at the University of Colorado. And also with us is Rob Warden. He is the executive director of the Center on Wrongful Convictions, and that's at Northwestern University. He played a significant role in Saturday's decision. As you were saying earlier, Rob, the work is just beginning. Let's talk a little bit about the philosophy behind the center in terms of, is the death penalty ever acceptable, and where you think this movement needs to go now?
Our concern with the death penalty has been not capital punishment itself, but the prospect that innocent people are going to be executed. And we think that we have shown ample evidence of that. And I always like to point out to people that I think almost anybody who ever studied this system in any depth will quickly come to the conclusion that it would simply be unconscionable to kill anyone based on the judgments rendered by a system that is so inherently fallible. But the recommendations that the Governor's Commission made here, the Governor's Commission on Capital Punishment, and there were like 85 of these recommendations, really ought to be applied across the board to the criminal justice system in general. The recommendations included video recording of custodial interrogations to guard against this phenomena that is amazingly widespread of false confessions. If we could simply see the entire interrogation process, there would be a deterrent to prevent the kind of trickery that's often used now to get people to confess to crimes that they did not commit. And it certainly would prevent the police from fabricating statements that the defendants subsequently deny and that there's no record of, other than maybe in some cases a policeman's notes, although we've seen examples of that where not even that existed. And in one case, a policeman said, oh, gee, I spilled coffee on them and they were all wet, so I had to throw my notes away. We've seen that kind of thing just over and over again in these cases. Our job now, as we see it, is to apply these recommendations, not only to capital cases, but across the board. And then, of course, there are 37 other states, including California, that still have capital punishment laws, and active capital punishment is more actively being practiced in many states than it had been in Illinois or California. But we think that we need to work to bring about results in those states.
Well, Governor Gray Davis came out immediately. He didn't waste a minute saying that in California we don't have those problems. We have a much better system of appeals. We don't make mistakes. What's your response
well,
to that?
That sounds just like the same thing that George W. Bush said and Jeb Bush has said and that governors across the country have said, and it's just absurd. I am telling you, as a longtime observer, Illinois probably has one of the better systems in the country. And whatever problems we have here are a fraction of those, percentage-wise, that occur in other states. I do think that California's system is no doubt better than Florida's, probably better than Texas and Georgia and Alabama, but I'm sure that California is no better than Illinois and probably not as good.
And Dennis, some of the listeners in the Bay Area would want to call an outfit called Death Penalty Focus in San Francisco.
Yes.
That organization has a lot of information to indicate that the only reason why Governor Davis can claim that the death penalty in California is in good shape is because he doesn't know anything about it, and because he won't authorize any studies to look at the issues of disparities and fairness and death sentencing in California.
We're also on in Houston. In terms of listeners there, how might they check in?
The best source in Texas is through the Amnesty International groups, especially through a professor at Southern Methodist in Dallas named Professor Rick Halperin. But any Amnesty International office in any one of the Texas cities can put people in touch with the Texas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty.
Well, we're going to be doing a lot more on that. But I do want to ask you, Mike Ratliff, I spent 5 years teaching in Rikers Island in New York City, moral issues, if you can believe that. And one of the things, I remember one student writing about the nature of justice, and he said, justice is a net. It's a net. If you can afford that net, you might be able to catch that bird called justice, too. If you don't have the net to catch the bird, you don't get justice. Isn't this about economics?
Well, in part, it's about economics. It's also about race. It's also about ethnicity. It's also about people getting sentenced to death by jurors who disproportionately are white and male and old and not like the defendants. But it is about justice. The way I think about the death penalty, it's actually, I think, less about justice to the offenders and more about justice to families of homicide victims who are the real pawns in this whole game. As Governor Ryan pointed out on Saturday, to say that the only thing that we can do for families of homicide victims is to put another family through grief by losing a loved one to violence is just nonsense. He spoke of, for example, needing a person who had been critically injured where another person had been murdered. And that person who was injured was not even able to afford the hospital bills. He spoke of a family of a homicide victim. They didn't have enough money to afford a funeral or a gravestone to properly bury their loved one. The death penalty costs millions and millions of dollars more than life imprisonment. Governor Ryan's actions on Saturday saved the state of Illinois tens and tens of millions of dollars. And if we really cared about families of homicide victims, instead of talking about the death penalty, we get rid of the death penalty, resentence all these guys to life imprisonment, and then use that money to have some constructive dialogue to figure out what we can do to help these families who are going through such a horrendous loss.
I'm wondering, Rob Warden, the role, you're now very high profile. I know that your phone is ringing off the hook. We can continue to hear it.
So in the background, I'm sorry.
It's quite all right. It's good news, and it doesn't come that often. So we're delighted to have that phone ringing in the background, knowing that people are very interested. And that's where I'm going with the question. I'm wondering how you will reach out, how the center will play a role in terms of other states, and will the governor join you? Maybe he'll be a co-executive director at the center.
Well, I would certainly welcome him because he's become an eloquent spokesman on this issue, and he certainly understands all of the ramifications, has done something that no other public official in the history of the United States has ever done on this issue. Part of our mission is public education. The great Anthony Amsterdam, who when he was a law professor at Stanford, handled the case of Furman versus Georgia, said to me, if we can only, when we can get a fair forum and we can get people to listen, we win this debate every time because all of the facts are on our side. There is nothing good that can be said for the death penalty. And I think that that's true. And what George Ryan has done here is open a dialogue, I think, across the country. And people are now willing to listen because we've shown the system has failed in all of these cases. We indeed want to play a part in that public education effort because we've seen the courts aren't going to reform. They aren't going to reform themselves, and the legislature isn't going to reform the system unless the public demands it. And the only way to bring that about is through public education. And we certainly welcome the opportunity to debate this issue with all comers.
Mike, final comments?
What I'm reminded of this morning, Sister Helen Prejean called me, and we were chatting about all this. I asked her what she thought of it, and she was talking about how difficult it is to give people things they deserve, whether those people be murderers, you know, what do they deserve, or whether it be employees. I mean, Dennis, I'm sure that everybody recognizes that you deserve a $20,000 raise. You know, just because you deserve it doesn't mean you're going to get it. But Sister Helen went on to say, you know, what we can calculate is what we deserve to do. And she said that the way that she viewed it, the essence of the death penalty debate now is not determining who deserves to live and who deserves to die, but rather to reflect on whether or not we deserve to kill. And certainly the information that they gathered in Illinois indicates that we're making these godlike decisions without godlike skills.
Wow. Well, that's the place we're going to leave it right now. And that's the voice of Mike Redlett. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Colorado. He is the author of a study on race that helped Governor Ryan make his decision. Of course, Governor Jeb Bush ignored the study. And also, we are delighted to have been joined by Rob Warden. He is the executive director of the Center on Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University. Congratulations to both of you. Thanks for being with us on Flashpoints.
Thank you.
Thank you.